And we'll move on to Appeal 013643, United States versus Raymond F. Pitts. Good morning, Mr. Tassif.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is George Tassif. I'm with the Office of the Federal Public Defender in Peoria, Illinois, appearing today on behalf of both defendants' appellants, Pitts and Alexander. This is an unusual case in that the District Court, Judge Mim, stated on the record he would have granted the motion to suppress on behalf of both defendants if it weren't for the issue of standing. This would have, could have situation places us now on appeal, arguing that defendants Pitts and Alexander did indeed make a sufficient showing that they had a legitimate expectation of privacy with respect to the express mail package mailed from Sacramento by Pitts and intended for receipt in Moline, Illinois by defendant Alexander. This case and this precise issue has never been resolved by this court. The closest case the Seventh Circuit has issued is U.S. versus Koenig. In the Koenig case, this court said that co-defendant Graff could not make standing in his case because he made no claim whatsoever as to any ownership interest in the parcel containing the drugs in question.
Doesn't that describe Mr. Alexander's position at least?
Well, with respect to Mr. Alexander, certainly one can infer from the affidavit that his counsel submitted that clearly Alexander was the intended recipient. Alexander asserted in the affidavit that he was notified by Pitts that there would be another package coming. He admitted that he had received earlier packages. Significantly, with respect to Alexander, a point that the court's order, district court's order, hammers home is the fact that Alexander never received notice by the postal inspectors.
But
with respect to the posting.
But he refused delivery of the package.
He refused delivery on that Tuesday before the Wednesday issuance of the search warrant when the postal inspector called him with the phone number obtained from the landlord and said, "Hi, I'm Randy Muskanik. I'm a U.S. postal inspector. Have you been receiving suspicious packages in the mail recently?" "No." "Were you expecting a package?" "No." "Would you like this package?" "No."
Well, what expectation of privacy does someone retain once they disclaim knowledge and refuse delivery of a package?
Well, as Alexander's counsel argued to the district court, by the time that Ms. Skanek called Alexander, number one, the package had been delayed at least 4.5 days. Number two, it had already been subject to what was argued to be an unreasonable seizure and detention. Number three, Alexander would have then been in a position to come forward and incriminate himself by acceptance of the package, a concept that the district court itself ridiculed when the agent testified, that had Alexander stepped forward and said, "Yes, I'm the intended recipient," they would have given him the package and that would have been that. The district court lambasted that and said on the record he didn't believe that.
The whole purpose of using fraudulent, phony names here is to disavow any interest in it if the heat is on, isn't it?
Well, I would submit, though, that under Fourth Amendment jurisprudence with respect to standing, if a defendant comes forward, as defendant Pitts clearly does, and says, "I own content. I am asserting a possessory interest in those contents," even though those contents may be illegal, normally Fourth Amendment jurisprudence...
Yeah, you probably wouldn't do that if you had a situation where Judge Mim here started by saying, "I would suppress this evidence if there was standing." Now, Judge Mim had a different situation where the evidence would not be suppressed if you could get past the standing.
Well, what concerns me is the fact that in almost every case that we handle at the district court level on a motion to suppress, that's our initial burden to show a possessory interest in the contraband in question, the gun found in the car, the drugs found in the apartment. That's clearly what Pitts did. He stepped forward and said in the affidavit under Simmons' immunity that those are his drugs and that he mailed those drugs. and that, I think significantly, he called the tracking number in, and on the 25th of June was told the package had been delivered. Even the government agent testified that the records established that had he called an automated number, it would have indicated that the package was due or scheduled to be delivered. There wasn't any indication that it had been seized or interdicted by federal drug enforcement agents. So Pitts clearly has standing. And the Fifth Circuit, in a number of cases, at least three panels of the Fifth Circuit, have said that a package that has addressed to a fictitious addressee still allows one to assert privacy interests and standing. But particularly important, and this is where we get back to Koenig, is that reviewing courts and district courts and all the decisions that are cited in the briefs and even the government concedes, the defendant's claim of ownership in the contents of the mailed package has been treated consistently as a substantial factor by courts in determining whether the defendant has standing. And that's clearly what Defendant Pitts did, and in so many words, so did Alexander. At least we knew Alexander was going to be the intended recipient. And unlike DiMaggio, which is the district court case that Judge Minim relies upon, unlike DiMaggio, that was a case where you had a fictitious sender and a fictitious recipient. But significantly, those packages in DiMaggio were being sent elsewhere other than to the defendant's residence. When we look to Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, clearly you have a reasonable expectation of privacy as to those matters you place in closed packages in the U.S. Mail. Jacobson and Van Leeuwen hold that. And clearly, when you have that further expectation of privacy into your premises, these defendants, and no one's going to condone the activity that they pled guilty to, but these defendants paid the premium rate for express mail delivery. Contractual delivery date was Friday at 3. The U.S. Postal Inspectors trampled that contractual agreement. They trashed it, and they waited another 3 or 4 days holding on to that package, trying a knock and talk, continuing their investigation, asking for all this information, which Judge Mim said, look, the clock was ticking, you let it run, you're too late when you got that search warrant on Wednesday, and I would grant this motion if you could show an expectation of privacy.
Well, as a factual matter, would Pitts have been able to retrieve the package if it was undeliverable? I mean, wouldn't you concede that postal regulations required him to present a valid ID to get the package back, and he didn't have the proper ID showing him to be the return addressee?
Well, it would have been a problem, but uncontroverted in this record is the fact, in the affidavit, he called in, they said it's delivered. And even the postal inspectors review of the record said it's due to be delivered.
But
Pitts was never in any position where he had to do that. There was no need to get an ID.
There's a different way of looking at it, though, which is that as soon as he launches it into the U.S. mail with the false, with Mildred Willard's address and the false identification, from that moment forward, he's not going to be able to get it back. He might be able to trace it. He might be able to call a phone number, but it's really never coming back to him because he won't be able to get it.
But still, with his assertion of an ownership interest in the contents of that package, I submit that does establish his standing for Fourth Amendment purposes. And I urge the court to consider Judge Hamilton's ruling, a district court judge in the Southern District of Indiana. It's U.S. versus Evans, which is cited in the brief. A number of occasions where the court said that society should accept as reasonable sending packages to persons in other than their known names. Politicians, business leaders. I was thinking on the way here to court, if I were in trial in Chicago and I wanted packages sent to me in care of a colleague under a different name so as to avoid anyone intercepting those packages, again, it deals with one's expectation of privacy as to the contents, which Pitts and Alexander have clearly done. So this court should reverse the district court's order, remand for further proceedings, in order that these defendants did indeed establish standing under the case authorities that are relied upon in our briefs.
Thank you, Mr. Tester. Mr. Legwell?
May it please the court, my name is Don Allegro. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Rock Island, Illinois. Mr. Tassif mentioned case authorities, precedent. He talks about the Fifth Circuit cases. I would suggest to the court that there really is no firm precedent on this issue. This is an issue that's basically wide open for the court to make law. The issue of whether somebody who seeks to distance themselves from an object, who uses phony names, other devices to put a screen between themselves and this object, do they have any reasonable expectation of privacy in, privacy in that object once it's seized by the police?
You know, yeah, you've argued that the expectation in privacy is diminished by the use of false names to conceal criminal activity. But aren't you putting the cart before the horse? I mean, you don't know that's the reason for the use of false names until after the search.
Exactly. And as Mr. Tass has indicated, I was also thinking of examples where there's not a criminal violation, and but you have the same kind of device. You know, the only thing I could think of is somebody trying to play a prank or somebody's excessively paranoid. They don't want to put their name on a package. Something along those lines.
Well, and take the case of federal judges. Right. You know, when you go get your briefing, when you're first appointed, they give you this ominous speech about how many federal judges have been murdered at their homes, and you know, from packages being sent, and one might rationally say, you know, gee, when you're sending me a package, use my mother's maiden name instead of my name,
right,
because people don't know it as well.
Yes, Judge, and the difference is when your package is in the mail and it gets broken open by a packaging, by the sorting machine or whatever, and they seek to contact the owner of the package, they're going to contact your mother-in-law or somebody like that, and they're going to say, oh, yes, give me the package, or send it to Judge Rovner. But in this case, they're going to call.
Wait a minute, Mr. Allegro. Oh,
Judge Wood. I'm sorry, Judge Wood. But
no, in this case.
No.
Oh, I thought you were having them send the. I guess there's a bomb to me.
No, there's no bomb in there. These are briefs or something. But in this case, they're going to contact Mildred, what's her name, in Sacramento.
Willard.
And they're gonna say, Ms., like they did, just as the postal inspector did. He called her up Saturday morning. Is this your package? Did you send it? No, I didn't. I have nothing to do with it. I don't know whose package it is. Eventually, they get around to getting in contact with this Alexander guy, which they tried for 2 days to get in contact with, and they sat at his house for 6 or 7 hours on Monday. Nothing any normal postal delivery person would do. They sat at his house for 6 or 7 hours on Monday, waiting for him. He didn't show up. They call him on Tuesday. He says, I don't know anything about a package. I don't know anything about any of the packages. I don't want the package.
But, you know, it seemed to me, sort of following up on what Judge Rovner said about getting the cart before the horse, in some ways the ultimate assertion of privacy is to use a false name. I mean, it's trying to make sure that no one knows about your business of mailing this thing. And what I'm trying to figure out is how one distinguishes the cases where, you know, let's say a different name is used, a name for convenience or the movie star case, from the case where somebody's simply trying to, you know, have 6 or 7 different aliases because of drug dealing. How do you draw that line?
I don't think there is a difference, Your Honor. I think because what we're talking about is not whether the person can be prosecuted, it's whether they can object to the search of the package. And if there's nothing illegitimate about it, I assume this would come up in a civil context. I sue the postal office, the authorities. You shouldn't open my package. And
but what if the package is filled with Viagra or something, and somebody's just embarrassed? You know, they don't really want the whole.
Don't send that one to me.
Well, I'm not sending it to Judge Rovner either. Makeup things people just like to keep private.
Right, and they have their privacy. Unless the police open it for some reason. And at that point, do they have a right to sue the police in that context for opening the package wrongfully? And I would suggest no. If they were reasonable, if they contacted the listed owner and they said, I don't have anything to do with that package. And for some reason they're suspicious, like in this case, a series of packages, the way it was packaged, the size, the weight, and they open it, can Judge Evans sue the police successfully? I would suggest not, because they were reasonable in what they did.
Well, what's the standard for review, in your view, on the issue of the reasonableness of the detention of the package? Because the district court here had some pretty good reasons, it seems to me, to believe the postal inspector was not being entirely forthcoming. And once the dog failed to alert, it seems to me the package should have been delivered without further delay. Why should we second-guess the district court on the fact issue?
Well, I think the district court overlooked a number of facts and didn't take those into consideration. When the dog, on Monday morning, when the dog did not alert, they promptly took it for delivery. Instead of having a mailman deliver it, a postal inspector went to deliver it. That's the only difference. And postal inspectors, I believe it's part of the record, are specifically authorized to deliver mail. A postal inspector went to deliver that package, and then, unlike, as I indicated, a normal mailman would, he sat on that house for 6 or 7 hours trying to deliver it for almost an entire day. When nobody showed up, he left a business card. Mr. Cassis said Alexander didn't get notice. Well, no, he got notice. He got a business card that said U.S. Postal Inspector on it. Now, undoubtedly, that scared him. But he did receive notice that there was an item of mail there for him. He didn't in any way contact the post office. He didn't call the number on the card, obviously. The next day, they called him on the phone, and he disavowed any interest. So we would suggest that not only was there no reasonable expectation of privacy in this package, but we think under the precedent out there, especially this Gill case just came out of the Ninth Circuit, that Judge Mim was in error on saying that the postal inspectors unreasonably delayed the package. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allegro and Mr. Cassis.
The package was seized Friday afternoon. It was contractually to be delivered by 3 p.m. They wait that weekend. They don't get a drug dog. Nobody will return the agent's phone calls. Monday morning, they get the drug dog who sniffs the package and does not alert. So what do? Somewhere around noon hour that day, on Monday, they drive over to the Quad Cities, some 3 hours away, where they sit on that house until 5 or 6 o'clock that evening. I posed this question to Mr. Miskanik. I said, gee, that's the time that most people are coming home from work. You guys are leaving, watching the house that afternoon at a time when some people may be just getting off work and coming home. You didn't wait any later, did you? And that's in that record. And Judge Mims said there was no notice per the post office regulations, a little green card posted on the window or put in the mailbox. It says you can come into the post office, show us your ID, and you're going to get this package. And what's particularly interesting about this case is the fact that there were 3 prior packages that were indeed delivered to that address. And presumably it was Bruce Bones, a.k.a. Alexander, or whoever, whatever other name he was using at that time, taking those packages. So for all these reasons, standing is established. We ask the court to reverse.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cassis. Thank you, Mr. Allegro, for a well and lively argued case, and we'll take the next case.